Chapter 28. One gets this idea from his next question. Did your voices tell you that you would be liberated before 3 months? Joan often showed a little flash of surprise at the good guessing of the judges, and she showed one this time. I was frequently in terror to find my mind, which I could not control, criticizing the voices and saying, they counsel her to speak boldly, a thing which she would do without any suggestion from them, or anybody else. But when it comes to telling her any useful thing, such as how these conspirators manage to guess their way so skillfully into her affairs, they are always off attending to some other business. I am reverent by nature, and when such thoughts swept through my head they made me cold with fear, and if there was a storm and thunder at the time, I was so ill that I could, but with difficulty abide at my post, and do my work. Joan answered, that is not in your process. I do not know when I shall be set free, but some who wish me out of this world will go from it before me. It made some of them shiver. Have your voices told you that you will be delivered from this prison? Without a doubt they had, and the judge knew it before he asked the question. Ask me again in 3 months and I will tell you. She said it with such a happy look, the tired prisoner. And I? And Noel Rainguesson, drooping yonder? Why, the floods of joy went streaming through us from crown to sole. It was all that we could do to hold still, and keep from making fatal exposure of our feelings. She was to be set free in 3 months. That was what she meant. We saw it. The voices had told her so, and told her true to the very day, May 30th. But we know now that they had mercifully hidden from her how she was to be set free, but left her in ignorance. Home again. That day was our understanding of it, Noel's and mine. That was our dream, and now we would count the days, the hours, the minutes. They would fly lightly along, they would soon be over. Yes, we would carry our idol home, and there, far from the pomps and tumults of the world, we would take up our happy life again, and live it out as we had begun it, in the free air and the sunshine, with the friendly sheep and the friendly people for comrades, and the grace and charm of the meadows, the woods, and the river always before our eyes, and their deep peace in our hearts. Yes, that was our dream, the dream that carried us bravely through that 3 months to an exact and awful fulfillment, the though of which would have killed us, I think, if we had foreknown it, and been obliged to bear the burden of it upon our hearts the half of those weary days. Our reading of the prophecy was this. We believed the king's soul was going to be smitten with remorse, and that he would privately plan a rescue with Joan's old lieutenants, Dalinon and the Bastard and La Hire, and that this rescue would take place at the end of the 3 months. So we made up our minds to be ready, and take a hand in it. In the present, and also in later sittings, Joan was urged to name the exact day of her deliverance, but she could not do that, as he had not the permission of her voices. Moreover, the voices themselves did not name the precise day. Ever since the fulfillment of the prophecy, I have believed that Joan had the idea that her deliverance was going to dome in the form of death. But not that death. Divine as she was, dauntless as she was in battle, she was human also. She was not solely a saint, an angel, she was a clay-made girl also, as human a girl as any in the world, and full of a human girl's sensitiveness and tenderness and delicacies. And so, that death. No, she could not have lived the 3 months with that one before her, I think. You remember that the first time she was wounded she was frightened, and cried, just as any other girl of 17 would have done, although as he had known for 18 days, that she was going to be wounded on that very day. No, she was not afraid of any ordinary death, and an ordinary death was what she believed the prophecy of deliverance meant, I think, for her face showed happiness, not horror, when she uttered it. Now I will explain why I think as I do. 5 weeks before she was captured in the Battle of Compiègne, her voices told her what was coming. They did not tell her the day or the place, but said she would be taken prisoner, and that it would be before the feast of St. John. She begged that death, certain and swift, should be her fate, and the captivity brief, for she was a free spirit, and dreaded the confinement. The voices made no promise, but only told her to bear whatever came. Now as they did not refuse the swift death, a hopeful young thing like Joan would naturally cherish that fact, and make the most of it, allowing it to grow and establish itself in her mind. And so now that she was told she was to be delivered in 3 months, I think she believed it meant that she would die in her bed in the prison, and that that was why she looked happy and content, the gates of paradise standing open for her, the time so short, you see, her troubles so soon to be over, her reward so close at hand. Yes, that would make her look happy, that would make her patient and bold, and able to fight her fight out like a soldier. Save herself if she could, of course, and try for the best, for that was the way she was made. But die with her face to the front, if die she must. Then later, when she charged Cochin with trying to kill her with a poisoned fish, her notion that she was to be delivered by death in the prison if as he had it, and I believe as he had, would naturally be greatly strengthened, you see. But I am wandering from the trial. Joan was asked to definitely name the time that she would be delivered from prison. I have always said that I was not permitted to tell you everything. I am to be set free, and I desire to ask leave of my voices to tell you the day. That is why I wish for delay. Do your voices forbid you to tell the truth? Is it that you wish to know matters concerning the King of France? I tell you again, that he will regain his kingdom, and that I know it as well as I know that you sit here before me in this tribunal. She sighed, and, after a little pause, added, I should be dead, but for this revelation, which comforts me always. Some trivial questions were asked her about St. Michael's dress and appearance. She answered them with dignity, but one saw that they gave her pain. After a little she said, I have great joy in seeing him, for when I see him, I have the feeling that I am not in mortal sin. She added, sometimes St. Marguerite and St. Catherine have allowed me to confess myself to them. Here was a possible chance to set a successful snare for her innocence. When you confessed, were you in mortal sin, do you think? But her reply did her no hurt. So the inquiry was shifted once more to the revelations made to the king, secrets which the court had tried again and again to force out of Joan, but without success. Now as to the sign given to the king, I have already told you that I will tell you nothing about it. Do you know what the sign was? As to that, you will not find out from me. All this refers to Joan's secret interview with the king held apart, though 2 or 3 others were present. It was known through Loiseleur, of course, that this sign was a crown, and was a pledge of the verity of Joan's mission. But that is all a mystery until this day, the nature of the crown, I mean, and will remain a mystery to the end of time. We can never know whether a real crown descended upon the king's head, or only a symbol, the mystic fabric of a vision. Did you see a crown upon the king's head when he received the revelation? I cannot tell you as to that, without perjury. Did the king have that crown at Reims? I think the king put upon his head a crown which he found there, but a much richer one was brought him afterward. Have you seen that one? I cannot tell you, without perjury. But whether I have seen it or not, I have heard say that it was rich and magnificent. They went on, and pestered her to weariness about that mysterious crown, but they got nothing more out of her. The sitting closed. A long, hard day for all of us. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.